Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Protect your family's future with life cover from Zurich. Talk to a financial broker to find out more.
Now, the Office of High Commissioner for Human Rights in Ukraine has just published two reports documenting violations of international human rights and humanitarian law, focusing on the treatment of prisoners of war and the overall human rights situation in Ukraine. The stark findings uncovered breaches of human rights with evidence of torture, sexual violence and use of arbitrary detention. Well, I spoke with Matilda Bogner, the head of the United Nations Human Rights Mission in Ukraine, a little earlier on, and I began by asking her about the main findings of the report.
Yes. We interviewed more than 400 prisoners with about 200 on each side. So we have a fairly detailed picture of the treatment of both Russian prisoners of war who are held in Ukraine, as well as Ukrainian prisoners of war held either in Russia or in occupied areas of Ukraine. Unfortunately, we found that there's torture and ill treatment against all prisoners of war. I mean, prisoners of war on both sides. High levels of torture and ill treatment. We documented cases of summary executions of both Russian prisoners of war and Ukrainian prisoners of war. And we found that conditions, particularly conditions of detention in the Russian Federation, were shocking, that people were not provided with sufficient food, sometimes with inadequate water or not safe drinking water, and lack of medical care.
Is there a difference in terms of the numbers of violations on either side? Can you tell us what sort of figures we're talking about when it comes to Russia?
With Russia, we documented 15 cases of summary executions of Ukrainian prisoners of war. So that is highly concerning. These are cases that have not been investigated or prosecuted as far as we know. And these are cases that usually happen shortly after capture, often on the battlefield. Once prisoners of war were captured, we found that 90% of those interviewed were tortured or ill-treated at some point during their detention, which is a very high number. And then if we look at it more from a qualitative perspective, we found very serious forms of torture. It included electrocution, it included beatings, sometimes stabbing or shooting in the limbs, as well as other forms of ill-treatment, humiliation, and other forms of treatment that are clear violations of international humanitarian law.
You also document the Russian use of prisoners of war as human shields. I don't know, can you give us some context for how that would happen?
The case that really comes to mind is one case that we documented where members of the Wagner group, security and military contractors for the Russians, they took Ukrainian prisoners of war and they took them with them as they were carrying out an offensive against Ukraine. So they were trying to minimize the harm that the Ukrainians would do to them because they would see that there were Ukrainian prisoners of war with them. They also sometimes took the uniforms of the Ukrainian prisoners of war and use those when attacking.
And from the Ukrainian perspective then, and their treatment of prisoners of war, what sort of numbers are we talking about there?
Yes, if we look at summary executions, we documented 25, around 25 cases of summary executions of Russian prisoners of war by Ukrainian armed forces. Again, this usually happened on the battlefield shortly after capture. This is a clear violation and a serious violation of international humanitarian law. The Ukrainians have opened about 5 investigations that involve executions and torture of about 22 Russian prisoners of war. But we are concerned that we have not seen progress with those investigations. There have been no cases prosecuted so far. Apart from summary executions, we also see torture and ill treatment, with about half of the Russian prisoners of war suffering from torture and ill treatment at the hands of Ukrainian armed forces or law enforcement authorities.
You have a second report then about the more general human rights situation in Ukraine at the moment, and during the reporting period of the 12 months that you've been looking at this, can you tell us how many civilian casualties you've recorded at this stage?
Since the beginning of the conflict on the 24th of February last year until now, we have more than 8,000 civilians have been killed, and around 14,000 have been injured. So we have recorded thousands and thousands of civilian casualties. The overwhelming majority, about 90%, have been killed from explosive weapons of war. So this is like shelling and missiles and so on. That is what has caused the overwhelming majority of civilian casualties in Ukraine.
There's also a number of documented cases, a big number of documented cases of conflict-related sexual violence.
Yes, we have documented, up until we released these reports, about 133 cases of conflict-related sexual violence. Of those, 109 are attributable to the Russian forces and 24 to Ukrainian side. We have documented two main forms of sexual violence. One is usually of men, and it's in places of detention. And this is where sexual violence is used as a form of torture against detainees. And unfortunately, this is something we have been documenting for a much longer period in Ukraine, dating back to 2014 with the beginning of the conflict that happened in the East at that time, that torture often involves some forms of sexual violence. The other main area is what has happened in communities, and that has been in areas where Russian forces have occupied Ukrainian territory, and there's been a high number of Russian forces in communities within Ukraine, and there we have seen the rape or other sexual violence against women, mainly against women, and in a few cases against girls.
There's been a lot of talk about the forced disappearance or abduction, arbitrary detention of people, children and adults, from Ukraine to Russia. Did you find any evidence of that, or what did you document in relation to that?
We have documented more than 600 cases of enforced disappearances that have been carried out by the Russian Federation. These are cases where the Russian forces have basically detained somebody because of either because they saw them as a security threat. They may have been supporting the Ukrainian armed forces in one form or another, but also if they saw them as particularly pro-Ukrainian in terms of their views. We've seen local authorities, we've seen civil activists, we've seen former service people who've been detained in these types of situations. In the cases that we documented, about half of those people have since been released, and the other half remain in detention in the Russian Federation.
You noted that some of the transfers, forced transfers or deportations to the Russian Federation included children and adults who lived in institutionalised settings. So are we talking about people who are in mental health institutions, for example, in those situations, or nursing homes, or what do you mean by institutionalized settings?
Yes, it's usually nursing homes, homes for the care of people with disabilities, or for children who don't have parental care, what we would often term as orphanages, but it doesn't mean necessarily that the children don't have family, but they have been placed in these types of institutions. Ukraine has a quite high level of institutionalization for children who come from homes with a difficult families where they then don't have parental care, they're placed in these types of institutions, as well as people with disabilities, whether it's children or adults. And in areas where Russian forces took over and occupied areas where there were institutions, that we have documented cases that the Russian forces or Russian authorities have taken people from those institutions and moved them away from areas of hostility, either into other parts of occupied areas of Ukraine or sometimes into the Russian Federation itself.
There have also been cases of forced detention or disappearances by Ukraine towards Russian citizens. Is that correct?
We have cases of enforced disappearances. We documented 91 cases of enforced disappearances that were carried out by Ukrainian authorities. These are people who are in Ukraine, usually Ukrainian citizens, but who the authorities have considered as either being having carried out some form of collaboration activity with Russian forces, or again who have views that they consider as pro-Russian in some form, and they have then been targeted for detention. But when they are detained, they have not registered their detention and have not given families, relatives, lawyers, information regarding where these people have been detained. So they've been held incommunicado, and in that sense it's been enforced disappearance. Usually after some period of time, they show up again and have been formally detained and held in a place of detention.
Just finally then, Matilda, what are your recommendations from these two reports?
Well, the biggest recommendation is that both sides need to fully comply with international humanitarian law. There must not be more summary executions. There must not be more torture. And this means that the sides need to really give clear orders to their military to stop this type of behaviour. They need to put in place mechanisms of oversight to ensure that this doesn't happen. And in the cases where there are allegations, they need to open investigations and prosecute those who are thought to be responsible.
That was Matilda Bogner, the head of the United Nations Human Rights Mission in Ukraine, speaking to me a little earlier on.